You are listening to The Point from MC3 in Lewistown, Pennsylvania. Check us out on the web at mc3church.org or find us on Facebook at mc3church. MC3, it's like nothing you'd expect.
And it is good to be back. Wow, I missed this. I missed the music. I miss just all of you people and all that. So, I was out for the last few weeks on vacation, and I'm back. So, yay. I don't mean yay for me, but yay for you. Like, Justin, Chris, I know, did an incredible job while I was gone. They're some of my favorite speakers, so I say that all the time. This week and this month, I should say, all of the kids that are normally in kindergarten through fifth grade are now in here during The Point. And so I'm going to be doing something slightly differently. Anyway, so that maybe get them more involved in interacting with us. So why don't we first of all turn on the house lights, Sarah, so I can see who's out here. So just to make sure that I don't, like, mistake anybody like Drew for someone that's supposed to be in Ignition, kind of the reverse of what Steph was trying to get at. If you're normally in Ignition, would you raise your hand? Like, if you're in kindergarten through fifth grade, raise your hand up high. I need you to see. I'm not going to make you do anything yet. Okay, cool. So I'm going to be doing some things. And so adults, we want to keep them from, being bored because I'm boring. And so I'm going to need your help to be involved in this as well. But before we get into that, we're going to do some interactive things. But my first question is, how many of you in the entire room have played a Mario video game of any type? That could be Super Mario Brothers. That could be Mario Kart. Keep them up. That could be Super Smash Bros. That could be Donkey Kong. You know, you're like, wait, no, Mario. No, actually, that's where Mario got started, in Donkey Kong. So let me just do it this way. Have you, anybody raise their hand? You can raise it down here. I won't call you out. But anybody that's never played a Mario game? Just in a room there? Okay. All right, good. We're not going to call you out, Miranda. So my question for you, now I'm going to go to the Ignition kids, because you've all raised your hand. I want to know, yell out, what is your favorite character in any of those games to either play or to watch or to be or anything? Yoshi, you're not an Ignition. She was even an example of what you're supposed to do. So for Ignition kids, what's your favorite character? Princess Peach? Mario? All right. Any others? Peach? All right. The rest of you, no, you don't have an opinion? All right. Luigi? All right. I want to make just a statement, first of all. She's here, and her husband, Alethea and Michael, got married about a month ago now. And they got married here at MC3, and it was a beautiful day. But most of the day was the ladies getting dressed and pretty, and the guys being bored. So I had the opportunity to play Super Smash Bros. Up here in Bay 6, because that's where we were sent to get out of the house, to get everywhere. So we were in Bay 6, and it was so hot up there. And who was all playing? It was Brent and Michael. So five of us, Brent and Michael, me and Jack. Okay. And I am old, so I'm going to be turning 50 in about 3 months. And we played Super Smash Bros., which is short for brothers, by the way, just in case you weren't aware of that. And I'm way off track. I'm supposed to be going fast, Sarah, or Kara. I said I was going to go fast. I was Kirby, right? Yeah, and apparently in Super Smash Bros., Kirby is like the lame character that you're supposed to be if you can't play. So I played it. And I just want you to know that I won. I won a round. I did, totally won a round. And that's a big deal because they were like, man, I wish I knew his tricks. I'm like, so do I. I'm just pushing buttons, and I know if I do this thing, it makes them float and drop like a weight. It's awesome. They can't do anything about it. Anyway, so I won. My point is Mario characters. Okay, so how many of you, moving into actual what I'm talking about, how many of you have seen the Super Mario Brothers movie? Anybody seen that one? And then Super Mario Galaxy just came out, and actually I think tonight we might be watching that as a family. So my question is, just a quick question off the top of your head, anybody can answer this? Who do you think the star of the Super Mario Brothers movie is?
Bowser.
Okay, Bowser. All right, come on, just you're overthinking it. Mario. Okay, good, good, good. That's what I wanted. So I want to, and Mario was played by Chris Pratt, who also played Emmett in the Lego movie. And so I thought it would be kind of fun just to look at the star of the movie, you know, Mario, the star, and the stars behind it, Chris Pratt and Jack Black, who plays Bowser. And so we're going to watch the credits here and just kind of look at the actual people that are in this movie. So go ahead and roll that. These are the end credits. And so this is the, what's the name of that thing? I forget. Huh? Luma, right, right, right. So here are the directors. Directors are important. So that's important. You got producers, they're the ones that drop the money and make it happen. That's really good. Here's the writer who put the story together and how Mario fits. And now we're getting to the main stars. Chris Pratt, right? Star-Lord. You've got Anya Taylor-Joy, and she's in a bunch of things too, but I don't remember. Charlie Day, he's in this too. Jack Black, of course, you know him. He's in all sorts of comedy movies. Keegan-Michael Key, Penn State alum, big fan of the college. Seth Rogen, funny guy as well, plays Donkey Kong in this movie. Fred Armisen, many of you probably don't know him because he's an older actor. And then these other guys who you, of course, see as names on the list. Now we're in the directors. What if we sped it up a little bit? And we'll go through, and there's all these other people that are in the movie. And, you know, you've got the directors and the animators. And maybe pull the volume down a little bit so you can hear me. I don't know if you can hear me. They get awful sound. So you got, you know, here's the actual rolling credits. And there's your cast who plays all those, the voices, the editors, consultants, artists, colorists, character designers, artists, more artists, animators, lots of animators, more animators, people that fix things, I guess, directors, character directing. That's going too fast. I can't see there. Rigging, surfacing, artists, you know, all these things that you always think about. You know, there's a lot of credits here, just to be clear, right? We're aware that there are a lot of things. A lot of people involved in the production of this movie. Whoa, it just got big. That was weird. Look at them all. Editors. There's a scientist involved in this movie. I'm not sure why. So what if we just slowed it down here? There's the choir. So what if we just pause right here for a second? And here's the choir for the score. So there are people that are going like, oh, you know, in the background of some song. Just out of curiosity, let's just pick someone here. Let's pick my laser. Maybe you can see it. Maybe you can't. I'm not supposed to do this too long because I'll burn a hole in the screen, I was told. Where'd it go? Oh, I should turn it on. There we go. Okay. All right, there. There. I don't know if you can see my little laser right there. There's a guy you can't really... This guy on the left, Reed Bruton. Reed Bruton. How many of you have heard of Reed Bruton? Anybody? Like, is he one of your favorite choir members? You're like, yeah, you got posters of him on your wall. You know, you listen to his tracks on your cassette tapes because, you know, Reed is your fan. But would you agree that Reed is not the star of the Super Mario Bros. Movie? Yes? Give me a yes out loud. Okay, good. All right, good. So, yeah, I would agree. And to say that he was the star would be totally unusual. If, you know, suddenly, you know, they're promoting the movie and they ask this Reed Bruton guy to come and be there at the red carpet and, you know, maybe cut a ribbon and things like that. Because you say, no, he's not the star. The star is about someone else. All of that to say that where we're going this morning, the hero that we're going to look at this morning was actually someone that should never have been the star of the story. Because everyone that was reading this story, especially the early Jewish audience, they were reading this story when they would hear the story, when the story was being told to them. The star, this person would never be the star because the stars are the heroes of the, you know, the main characters of the story. Sort of like, you know, we would say Chris Pratt's probably the star here. And so this morning we're going to be talking, you can turn on the house lights for good, I guess. We're going to be talking about a character from the Bible that you may have heard of. Her name is Rahab. And just for adults, Rahab had a specific job, and her job we'll talk about briefly. And I didn't realize that I was planning this topic with the week that all the Ignition kids are here. So, but the point today is Rahab was rescued by a life of humility. And what we're going to see as we talk about Rahab is that she was kind of the nobody in the story. She shouldn't have been there. She wasn't the star, and yet her humility and her willingness just to recognize that she doesn't deserve anything, she becomes the star of the show. So, like I said, we're going to be a little bit interactive here. And so I want to start about with the cast list. And just to give you some background, if you remember the story series we did last winter, I suppose, this takes place in what was called Chapter 4 Invasion, which is where the people were getting ready to go into the Promised Land. So if you were here the first week that I taught of this series, can you pull me back a little bit, Zach? I'm sorry. The first week I taught of this series, we looked at the spies, the 12 spies that went into the land, and Caleb was one of the good spies that said, no, we can do this. He was steadfast and said, no, we don't need to worry about those people because we have God. And of course, they disobeyed and had to wander for 40 years in the desert. And now we're 40 years later, and they're getting ready to go into the Promised Land, to go into this land that God had promised. And it's called invasion, and we'll talk about that in a little bit. But they were going to go in there because these people, as Christina read, these people were disobeying God. So it's not like this was something that was horrible. This was God's judgment on people that had disobeyed him. And they're getting ready to go in the land. So that's where we are, okay? So it's been 40 years of wandering. They just crossed the Red Sea. It was miraculous. They're now at the edge of a city called Jericho. And they're getting ready to go into Jericho. So let's do the cast list. First of all, there's the stars. And the stars in this story are two guys, two spies or two men, because they're the two. By the way, if you remember from a month ago, there were 12 spies that went in. This time there were only two. And they were to go into the land. And these two men, these two Jewish guys, were expected to be the stars of the story. They were the heroes. They were the ones like, yes, look at these men. They're standing. They're representing us. They're going to go in. And unlike those, you know, our parents 40 years earlier, they're going to stand confident in God. And so the stars, what I want you to do every time we read either the spies, the two spies, the two men, we're going to cheer for them because they're the stars of the show. Now, that's in quotes because we're going to find out later that maybe they're not the stars. So on the count of three, I need you all to say, yay, because they're the stars. Okay, one, two, three. Yay! Okay, very good. So every time we read the two spies or the spies of the men, you're going to say, yay! Very good. Okay, so let's practice. Let's start with Joshua chapter 2, verse 1. It says, then Joshua secretly sent out two spies from the Israelite camp at Acacia Grove. He instructed them, scout out the land on the other side of the Jordan River, especially around Jericho. So those are the stars of the show. That's the first part of our cast list. The second person we run into is the nobody. The nobody. And her name was Rahab. And she's not supposed to be the star, and we'll talk about why in a little bit. But what I want you to do is every time we read the name Rahab, you need to go, huh? Okay, because she's like, what? Why are we talking about her? So on three, you're going to give me a, huh? One, two, three. Huh? Okay, so every time we read Rahab, you're going to go. Every time we read spies, you're going to go. Yeah. Okay, very good. So Joshua 2:1. Then Joshua secretly sent out two spies from the Israelite camp at Acacia Grove. He instructed them, hold on. There's a whole bunch of Ignition kiddos back here, right? And I'm hearing way more noise from these like college crew over here. That needs to change because I know that some of you have very big mouths. I know. So, all right. So we're going to start it over again. And we'll be here all day if we don't get this right. Okay. So then Joshua secretly sent out two spies. Yay! Okay. That's better. From the Israelite camp at Acacia Grove, he instructed them, scout out the land on the other side of the Jordan River, especially around Jericho. So the two men set out and came to the house of a prostitute named Rahab and stayed there that night. Very good, very good. So now we're getting that. And again, Rahab had a certain profession. She was a prostitute, which was just a bad job. It was something that did not honor God, and unfortunately that title is going to be stuck with her the rest of her life. But again, as adults, that's part of why her story is so powerful. So we've got the stars, we've got the nobody, and finally we've got the bad guy. And when we read the bad guy, you're all going to go, boo! Okay, on three. One, two, three. Boo! Okay, so the bad guy is the king of Jericho, or even when you see the king's men, we're gonna do a good boo, okay? So, continuing in verse 2, it says, but someone told the king of Jericho, some Israelites have come here tonight to spy out the land. So the king of Jericho sent orders to Rahab, bring out the men who have come into you. This is fun. Who have come into your house, for they have come here to spy out the whole land. So now we've met the cast. So the so you don't get lost in the yays, boos, and all that. So Joshua sends these two men in to spy out the land and say, okay, is this something? Remember, 40 years earlier, their parents said, no, we couldn't do it. And they said, spy it out, check out this city, see what's ahead of us so we know where to go and we can trust God. And then they go to this house of this woman named Rahab, which is probably not a coincidence because people could probably come in and out of her house that were not from the city and no one else would really notice. You with me? And so they went and stayed at her house. And then the king of Jericho hears that there's these spies from the Israelites that are in their city. So he is not happy. He's like, you need to tell us where these men are because we want them out. And you'll see in a little bit that they're actually afraid of the Israelites. So that's the cast. Now I want to talk about this nobody. This nobody named Rahab. Again, she's kind of the guy at the very end there, the choir guy. Like, she is not supposed to be the star. She's a prostitute who lives in this foreign city of people that don't honor God. And again, they're getting ready to be destroyed because of their disobedience. But the thing about Rahab is what makes her and what makes her this the star of this show is that she humbled herself. And again, Rahab, she was rescued by a life of humility. And humility or humbled means you put yourself below something, someone, others, whatever. Humility says, I'm not important. I'm putting myself below. And so Rahab humbled herself in a number of different ways that actually ended up, spoiler, saving her and her entire family from destruction. So the first thing that Rahab did is that she humbled herself to a greater authority. And what we're talking about here is that Rahab recognized that there were important people in her life, scary people in her life, but that the God of the Israelites, the true and living God, was far more important to honor. And so here's where we pick up the story. And don't forget to join me in your in participation. So in verse 4, it says, Rahab had hidden the two men. But she replied, yes, the men were here earlier, but I don't know where they were from. I didn't know where they were from. They left the town at dusk as the gates were about to close. So I don't know where they went. If you hurry, you can probably catch up to them. But actually, she had taken them up to the roof and hidden them beneath bundles of flax she had laid out. So the king's men went out looking for the spies along the road leading to the shallow crossings of the Jordan River. And as soon as the king's men had left, the gate of Jericho was shut. And so what we have here is Rahab, she recognized that God's authority was greater than the king of Jericho and realized that the king of Jericho could have imprisoned her, could have killed her for disobeying because this king says, show me these men, get these men out here. And she's like, oh, I don't know where they went. They left in the middle of the night and they're gone. You can probably catch them if you go follow. And so she lied. And I know on some level it's like, wait, are we saying that lying is okay? Well, Rahab was brand new. And she was doing, like, this is brand new to following Jesus, or to following God, I should say, Yahweh. And so we're going to give her a little bit of, okay, you know, lying is not the right answer. But she said, you know what, following God is more important than following others. And so she did that. And that was her humbling herself to that greater authority, saying, you know what, this person's important and this person can get me in trouble and can even hurt me. But God is so much more important than that. And I think one of the things about this passage, especially for adults, this is a great passage to be like, yeah, we need to stick it to our boss. Our boss can't tell us. I'm going to obey God rather than you. Or, maybe it's your politician. Yeah, stick it to the president. Yeah, stick it to the governor. Stick it to the whatever. Like, I don't have to obey you because God's authority is better. And sure, fine, you can do that. But my real question is, what about the other authorities in your life? What about your culture? What about your friends? If your friends want you to do something, are you going to go along with them and obey their authority because you don't want to look bad? Or are you going to say, no, wait, God's authority is more important? And Rahab recognized that. When she did this, she knew, I'm gonna deceive the king because I want to protect God's people. And it could cost her life. It could cost her prison. You know, do you give into the authority of keeping up appearances? You want to look good for everybody else? Or are you saying, you know what? God's authority is more important. Because that's humility. That's humility saying, you know what? Those things don't matter, but God does. His authority is far more important than any of these other things. So that was the first thing she did. She humbled herself to a greater authority. The second thing she did, she humbled herself to a greater story. And it picks up here in verses 8 to 10, and I'll come back here, but we're going to read the story going in verse 8. It says, before the spies, picking up in verse 8, before the spies, there we go, went to sleep that night, Rahab went up to the roof to talk with them. So she had them hidden on the roof. She goes up and talks to them. And listen to what she says. She says, I know the Lord has given you this land, she told them. We are all afraid of you, which is why the king of Jericho was looking for them. And here's the deal. She said, everyone in this land is living in terror, for we have heard how the Lord made a dry path for you through the Red Sea when you left Egypt. You guys know the story of crossing the Red Sea, right? Remember that story? They knew that. They had heard about this. I mean, that was 40 years ago, and they heard about it. And they said, how we know what you did to Sihon and Og, the two Amorite kings east of the Jordan River, whose people you completely destroyed. These were two kings that were rebelling against God, and they were completely destroyed. And so Rahab, the people knew the stories, and she recognized that that story was more important. Of what God was doing was more important than her own perspective. So she humbled herself to a greater story. She believed the stories of what God was doing. One of the things about, you know, the stories of what God is doing was that she didn't make excuses. She didn't try to justify or explain away the stories because she heard and said, yeah, I know that God could do that. Because I'm sure there were people going like, yeah, I heard those rumors. Ain't no God can cause rivers to dry up. There's no way that that could happen. That's not scientifically possible. There's nothing that could happen. It's no big deal. But she recognized, no, this God that she believed in was bigger, and his story was real. And so she said, I'm gonna submit to that. And so she says to these spies, like, God, I believe what God has done. And so my question for us, you know, if Rahab's believing in the story, what about you? Do you actually believe what you read in the Bible? Or do you make excuses for why you don't need to obey? Because we're going to see in a little bit, like, just knowing isn't the end. Knowing is, well, half the battle. It's believing and doing, having the faith to do. And do you believe the stories in the Bible, or you go like, that doesn't really apply to me. Oh, it's really old. It's antiquated. Hey, science has disproved that that's not true. Or do you have the humility that Rahab has that says, I'm gonna submit to a greater story, to God's story? Do you make excuses, or do you actually obey? And Rahab recognized that God was doing something that didn't make sense, but she says, I'm willing to put myself beneath God and beneath these stories because there's something powerful about him. So that was the second thing. The third thing she did is she humbled herself to a greater deity. And deity is just a fancy word for God. But here's what's wild about this story is that Rahab, again, she's not an Israelite. She's not a Jewish person. She is a pagan person in one of the Canaanites that lived in the city of Jericho. And the Canaanites worshiped tons of gods. One of the big deals about Canaanites is that they were involved in child sacrifice. That was a very normal part of their worship, was killing babies and worshiping a god with that lowercase g. And Rahab recognized, even though there were all these gods, she submitted herself to a greater deity, a greater God. And in verse 11, it goes on and she says, no wonder our hearts have melted in fear. No one has the courage to fight after hearing such things. For the Lord. And I want to pause there because if you see in your Bible, in your notes there, by the way, the YouVersion notes there, hopefully you got that. L-O-R-D, capital L-O-R-D. In the Old Testament, whenever you see it all in caps, it's a shorthand, if you will, for the word Yahweh, for the name of God. And Yahweh is a personal name. We talked about this in the name series, which you can find on the slideshow loop. But the name Yahweh is a personal name. It's sort of like, you know, you meet someone and they say, you know, like, hello, Mr. Fitch. Like, no, just call me Sean. Like, that's, you know, and even crazier people like Pastor Fitch. This is Pastor Fitch. Like, I don't know who that person is. Just call me Sean. Because it's personal. And that's what Yahweh is the name that God revealed himself to Moses at the burning bush. And so Rahab doesn't just say, this, your God is one of the gods. She says, Yahweh, the Lord. So she has a personal relationship now with the true and living God. And this is such a big deal that it's easy to kind of read by it. Well, she says, for the Lord, Yahweh, your God, is the supreme God. Other translations say, is the God above other, the capital G-O-D, above other lowercase G-O-D-S's. So she says, recognizes that this God is true and living. He is the real God. Your God is supreme God above the of the heavens above and the earth below. So imagine this, you're these spies going to this land, and these are like the pagans. These are the people that are not interested in following God. They're totally disobedient. They go to the house of a prostitute, which also isn't a great thing for them. And here's this woman saying, look, I want you to know that I know your God. And he is an amazing God. He is the true and living God, not one of many gods, but the God. And so she humbled herself to this greater authority. And I have a quote here from a Bible study I'm doing on the book of Joshua, and it's very interesting. It says, the first believer in the promised land was a former Gentile who was marked for judgment. And so if you think about it, the first person that gave their life to God in the promised land, this land where they're going to spend, well, Israel is in that land today, was this woman who was in a job that wasn't the greatest, who was a Gentile, a non-Jewish person, who was about to be destroyed because of the sin of these people. And she's the first person that's recorded in the Bible as turning to God in that land. And so she is, of course, a nobody, right? So then the final thing is, she submitted herself to greater authority, a greater story, to greater deed, and finally to a greater mercy. And this is just so crazy. In Joshua 2 and verse 12, she does something that doesn't make any sense. It would be sort of like, I don't know, I remember there was a scene from the original, I don't know how you say original, from the 89 Batman movie, where this guy meets Bruce Wayne. Okay, he's a reporter. And Bruce Wayne, of course, is super rich. You know Bruce Wayne, Batman? That was the song that we were listening to. That was from The Batman that gives Kendra all the, like, fear. But he meets Bruce Wayne for the first time. He's like, hi, you know, I'm just this lowly reporter. And then he says, can I have a grant? Can you give me money? And you're watching this scene, you're like, what in the world? You don't even know this guy. He's super rich. Why would he give you anything? You have no connection to him. And they have this whole dialogue. And then at the end, he tells Alfred the butler, hey, by the way, give this reporter thousands of dollars. And it kind of becomes a funny thing because you're like, why would Bruce Wayne give this guy anything? It'd be like you going up to somebody that I don't know, you don't even know. You go up to some famous, maybe it's Chris Pratt. You know, you write a letter to Chris Pratt. Hey, you don't know me. I know you're super rich. Can you give me, you know, $10,000? You know, hey, I know you don't know me. Can you put me in your next movie? Like, there's no obligation. Like, maybe you're like, okay, hey, my name is, Chris Pratt's my uncle. Okay. Maybe there's some family connection there. Or, you know, maybe one day you were hanging out downtown L.A., and Chris Pratt was walking across the street and a bus almost hit him, but you pushed the bus out of the way. you heard me there. You pushed and you saved his life. And so maybe Chris Pratt would owe you something. But probably in general, if you were to write to Chris Pratt, text him, he would just probably even ignore your call, your message. You know, he has no reason to listen to you. And this is exactly what Rahab is doing here. Because she recognizes this great God and she believes the story and she trusts his authority and she knows that he is the true and living God. And she does something that is just so gutsy. She says to these spies, now swear to me by Yahweh, by the Lord, by the true living God, that you will be kind to me and my family. And the Hebrew word there is a very important Hebrew word that just totally slipped my mind. There it is. Hesed. There it is. Hesed. It means loving kindness. And the word Hebrew hesed is often translated in the New Testament as grace. And so she says that just swear to me by this true and living God that you will just show me grace. Be compassionate. I do not deserve this, but be kind to me and my family since I helped you. Give me some guarantee that when Jericho is conquered, so she recognized that God was going to come in and do this, that you will let me live. And she just doesn't just say just me. She says, along with my father and mother, my brothers and sisters and all their family. She has the guts to say, God, you don't owe me a thing. I'm a nobody. I'm in a job that's not the best. And I'm living among people that sacrifice children to all these fake gods and these idols. And she says, but I believe you. So can you just rescue me? And the humility that is there is just incredible. And yet, the boldness and also to recognize that you owe me nothing, God, but would you be willing to save me? And not just me and my family. She has nothing to offer to God. And yet, the crazy thing is that he did it. He is so loving because honestly, Rahab is kind of the star, but really God's the star of this story. Because he is so loving and compassionate that he gives us what we don't deserve. And we mess up and say, God, forgive me. And he has no reason to forgive us because, you know what, I'm tired of you messing up that much. But he forgives. And we say, God, can you help me through this difficult situation? And God says, no, why would I help you? You're a nobody. But yet he does because he loves us. How great is the love of God. And so that's what Rahab did here. And so she humbles herself to a greater mercy. And now she says, please don't destroy me. And I know there's a lot of questions about that. Like, wait, why was God killing people? Again, these people had already disobeyed God. They had turned their backs on him. They were sacrificing children. So it wasn't great. But in the Crop 2 series, we specifically talked about this issue, about why would God kill innocent people? And so I encourage you to go there and listen to that before you make up your mind about why you don't need to obey Joshua. Or be like that. But then the other thing that was really interesting is that she says, give me a promise. And the guy said, look, here's what we're going to do. Here's a scarlet rope, a red rope. And we want you to hang it in the window of your house. And when we come in to destroy this city, we will save you and anybody else that is in the house where that red rope is hanging. And I said, if anybody gets out of the room, you're not going to be safe. You have to obey and submit to that. But we will save you. And this is a whole other topic for another day. But a red rope, the red is blood colored. If you submit to the blood, you will be saved. And if you rewind, you know, 40 some years earlier, God said that there's going to be a plague that's going to sweep over the entire households. And you need to kill an animal, a lamb, and paint its blood on the doorposts. And when the angel of death sees the red, the people inside will be saved. So blood saves the people that submit. A red rope saves the people that submit. Jesus dies on the cross and saves people that will submit. It's not an accident. That's a theme going through there. But we're not going to talk about that right now, even though I just did. So that was Rahab. She submitted, she humbled herself. And so all of this is this woman who becomes a hero because of her humility. And that's where we want to go now. This nobody, next slide, became somebody. So here's the deal. The spies aren't the star of the story. Rahab is the star of the story. And get this. Question, Ignition Kids, I need you. I know it's kind of like lots of rain. It's comfortable in here. I have a question for you. What are the names of the spies? Were you paying attention? Okay, everybody, what are the names of the spies? We don't know. They never even give us their names. Because even though they're supposed to be the star, the name we know is Rahab. Rahab is the one, this prostitute woman from this pagan city is the star. So this nobody became somebody. And here's the quick version of the story. And it goes, so wait, because she's a star, instead of the spies, now every time you hear the name Rahab, you're going to go, yeah, Okay, so let's just practice on three. One, two, three. Okay, so whenever you read Rahab, now it's not, huh, it's yeah. Okay, so first of all, we see an example of God's mercy, and we're going to go a little bit fast here just so you can see what's going on. Joshua 6, so a couple chapters later in Joshua. Joshua, the people, the walls, first of all, you know the story. They walk around the walls, and the walls fall down miraculously. It's a crazy cool story. And it says that in verse 17, Joshua says to the people, Jericho and everything in it must be completely destroyed as an offering to the Lord. Then he says, only Rahab, the prostitute, and the others in her house will be spared, for she protected our spies. And so he gives them instructions. Hey, guys, now that the walls are down, go in. Everything's going to be destroyed, except you need to save Rahab. And then a little bit later in verse 22, we see what's happening. It says, meanwhile, Joshua said to the two spies, because we don't care about them anymore, said to the two spies, keep your promise, go to the prostitute's house and bring her out, along with all her family. The men who had been spies, again, we don't care about them, went in and brought out Rahab, her father, mother, brothers, and all the other relatives who were with her. They moved her whole family to a safe place near the camp of Israel. So they went and got the entire family and said, we're going to get you out of here. We're keeping you safe. And again, a prostitute from this pagan nation, but she believed God. She humbled herself to God. And then a little bit later in verse 25, it says, so Joshua spared Rahab. So Joshua spared Rahab.
Yeah.
All right. The prostitute and her relatives who were with her in the house because she had hidden the spies sent Joshua sent to Jericho. And I love this last line. And she lives among the Israelites to this day. Now, that's not, 2026. But the time it was written, like she didn't just get rescued, but she became one of them. She became an Israelite, even though she technically wasn't one by birth. And so it's really cool because this nobody becomes a somebody. And again, we don't even know the names of the spies, even still, but we know Rahab. Now, here's the crazy part. That's a really cool story. The spies are supposed to be the star. Rahab becomes the star. That was an example of God's mercy. But we aren't done with Rahab yet. Get this. Three different New Testament authors talk about Rahab as an example. So this woman, this nobody, who is, one of the people that are in the choir at the end of the credits, is the star. And so we not only see an example of God's mercy, how he rescued Rahab and their family, we also have an example of good works. Because Rahab is now put forward, as I said earlier, faith isn't the end. It's faith that leads to doing, that's actual faith. And in James chapter 2, James says this. Don't forget what you're supposed to do when you read that name. James says, so you see, we are shown to be right with God. This is the end of the New Testament. We are shown to be right with God by what we do, not by faith alone. Not just by faith, but by doing. Rahab, the prostitute, is another example. She was shown to be right with God by her actions when she hid those messengers and sent them safely away by a different road. Just as the body is dead without breath, so also faith is dead without good works. So James says, you need an example of what it means to not just believe, but to do. Hey, let's talk about Rahab. Remember Rahab? She was an example of faith and doing. And so that's incredible. There's all sorts of people that James could have brought up as part of the New Testament. But he shares Rahab, this nobody. Then we also see an example of good works. We also see an example of great faith. Hebrews 11. First of all, Hebrews 11 is often called the Hall of Faith. And in YouVersion, the notes are there. You have Hebrews 11:31. If later you want to go back to that and click on read full chapter, you can look at this list of these amazing people that followed God by faith. You've got Abraham, huge. You've got Moses, massive importance person. You've got Noah. You've got prophets. Like there's all these incredible people that lived by faith in the Old Testament. And in verse 31 in Hebrews 11, the writer says, Rahab, the prostitute, had faith. So she welcomed the spies. That's why she wasn't killed with those who didn't obey God. So now you have a second author. We're not sure who wrote Hebrews. It might be Paul. It might not be. But a second author is now saying, this Rahab was important. This nobody is now getting starring credits. And she's in this list with big name people that are there with her. So that nobody became somebody, an example of God's mercy, an example of good works, an example of great faith. And then she was also an example of God's grace. And this is just incredible. The very beginning of Matthew chapter 1, which is when you open, if you have a paper Bible or if you go to Matthew 1, most likely you will not read it. You will go, boom, if you're reading on YouVersion, you're just going to swipe past it. If it's a Bible paper, you're going to turn the page because it's a genealogy. It's a list of people that had this person who was the father and parent of this person who was the parent of this person. And most people don't even pay attention to that. But biblically, a genealogy was a way to establish someone's credibility. Like I said, if your great uncle was Chris Pratt, people would be like, well, prove it. And you could be like, well, my mom's sister was married to a man's grandfather's. I don't even know how to figure out great uncle. But you know what I'm saying. You'd figure out great uncle would be your grandma. Yeah, my grandmother's brother, there we go, was Chris Pratt's uncle. No. My grandmother was Chris Pratt. There we go. something like that. But here's this genealogy, this list of people. And what's cool about the genealogy in Matthew chapter 1? Is that it's setting up the story of this important, the most important human, the most important Jewish person to come onto this planet. And his name was Jesus. And in Matthew chapter 1, verse 5, we read this. We said, Salmon, sounds fishy, was the father of Boaz, whose mother was Rahab. So there's this genealogy, whose mother was Rahab, Boaz, the father of Obed, whose mother was Ruth, Obed, the father of Jesse. And it goes on and on and on and on and on and on, down to verse 16, and says, and Jacob was the father of Joseph, the husband of Mary, and Mary was the mother of Jesus, who is called the Messiah. And what you need to understand, we did a series called The Many Jacob Generations in Jesus' Genealogy, a Christmas tale, a number of years ago. You can find that on our slideshow loop. But when a genealogy was made, you would hide anyone that you didn't want people to know about. Like, maybe your great uncle was Chris Pratt, but maybe your great grandfather was Hitler. Okay? You're probably going to be like, yeah, Chris Pratt. Over here. We kind of ignore him. Wait, how come there's someone missing there? Oh, there's a glitch in the Matrix. You would kind of ignore that because you don't want anyone to know. And that's what would typically happen. If you were writing a genealogy, especially because great kings would write genealogies to show how great they are. And you would leave out the parts that don't count. And you would certainly leave out someone that was a prostitute. You would definitely leave out someone, especially if you're a good Jewish king, who was not Jewish, who lived among people that worshipped other gods. And yet, Rahab was included in this genealogy. And so the nobody became somebody. And all of that was because of her humility. Because she was willing to put herself below the people, below God, and recognize that there are so much greater things, such a better story going on. And so Rahab was rescued by a life of humility. And so the question is, what does it look like to have humility? How do we have heroic humility? Because she's a hero. We're talking about a hero. Who's a nobody? And we have her name. We don't have the name of the spies. So, hey, guys, Ignition folks, kiddos, students, kids, whatever you want to be called, I don't know, kindergarten through fifth grade people, if you would come and stand right here. And I'm going to have you here, hopefully, and I actually would say sit right here. Find a seat on the stage there. So that you can sit and stand. So there's room for everybody. Okay. I thought you were coming up too, Kylie. Okay, that's not. Why don't you guys move? Can you spread out that way just to keep going so we can fit everybody in here? All right. So I'm going to need you guys to help me. I need you to look at me. Okay. Oh, okay. We're going to do some hand motions for this next part. And I need you to help them because they're old and they don't know how to do anything right. Okay. You're going to help them do these hand motions. And so we're going to do the first one, and then you can get to sit down. You don't have to stand the whole time. And then we'll do another one, okay, and back and forth like that. You with me? You okay with that? Okay, nod your head. That's a head motion. Can you do a head motion? Okay. No, that's the wrong way. This way. There. All right. So how to have heroic humility? There are four things that we need to do. When it comes, like, what does it look like to have humility? And the first thing we need to do is look up. So stand up, guys. So what we're going to do is we're going to look up. Head looking up to the sky, hands up like this. Can you do that? So everybody, yeah, you look at me, and then you can see where. So that's look up. All right, put your hands down. Okay, let's practice look up. On 3, 2, 1, look up. Okay, so now they're going to do the same thing too. So stand up. All right, well, should we count them down together? Like 3, 2, 1, look up. Can you do that with me? Say that with me. Okay, ready? 3, 2, 1,
look up.
Okay, good. All right, excellent. You guys can sit down. You guys can sit down. So looking up is the first motion, because if we're going to have humility, we need to recognize who we are. We need to recognize that we are sinners, that we're broken people, and that we need God. And frankly, that's the most important thing that we can do when it comes to humility. And I know it's hard, because we're like, I don't want to admit that I need somebody else. I don't want to admit that I'm not perfect. I don't want to admit that I don't need anybody to, I'm good. I can handle myself. But the first and the ultimate, the most important step of humility is to look up and say, God, I'm nothing. I'm a sinner. Just like Rahab did. There was nothing that she had that would make God rescue her or her family. She just said, I'm a nobody. I don't deserve this, God. But would you please save me? And Romans chapter 10, Paul says this. He says, if you openly declare that Jesus is Lord and you believe in your heart that God raised him from the dead, you will be saved. What are we saved from? Our sin, our destruction. We're going to hell without Jesus. Just as the people that Rahab lived among, they were about to be destroyed. And she says, no, I'm going to submit. I'm going to be humble and ask God for help. So he says, if you believe that God raised you from the dead, you will be saved. He says, Paul writes, for it is by believing in your heart that you are made right with God, and it's by openly declaring your faith that you are saved. It's belief. There's nothing we do. There's nothing we can do to earn it. There was nothing that Rahab could have done to earn it. It was her belief. And he goes on and says, as the scriptures tell us, anyone who trusts in him will never be disgraced. Jew and Gentile, and Gentiles are people that are not Jewish, are the same in this respect. They have the same Lord who gives generously to all who call on him. And he ends with, for everyone who calls on the name of the Lord will be saved. And so if you want to have heroic humility, if you want to have humility, you need to recognize, you need to look up and recognize that you need God. So that's the first thing, look up. Go ahead and stand up for me. The second one, now listen, look at me. These are dangerous, okay? Don't take out anybody's eyes. But Justin is here at the ready in case we do. So what we're going to do is the second thing. So first is look up. We'll do that in a second. The second is to look around. And looking around is pointing at all the other people and looking around. Can you do that? Okay, so that way, on 3, 1, 2, 3, look around. Yeah, pointing at people. Yeah, you're looking around at others. Okay. Are we ready to have them do it? Okay, all right, guys, stand up. We're going to start with look up. Don't forget what look up is. We're going to count down. Ready? 3, 2, 1, look up. All right, now, hands down. Okay, now we're going to do look around. 3, 2, 1, look around. There you go. Excellent. All right, you guys can all have a seat. So looking around means that you recognize that you're not the star. You're not the center. You're putting others first. In Romans chapter 12, Paul says this to the church in Rome. He says, because of the privilege and authority God has given me, I give you this warning. Don't think that you're better than you really are. Be honest in your evaluation of yourselves, measuring yourselves by the faith God has given you. It's so easy to think that we're most important, that our way is most important. How many of you guys like to get your own way? Hey, I'm talking to you front row. You like to get your own way? Yeah. How many of you like to choose what's for dinner? Yeah, you want to be the one. Do you like it when you have to eat vegetables? No? Okay. Okay, that's good. But yeah, I mean, we want our own way, and they're no different. We're no different. But Paul says, look, if you want to be humble, you need to recognize that other people are more important than you. Don't think that you're better than anyone else. Over in Philippians, Paul says this, and he actually gives us an example of Jesus. He says, don't be selfish. Don't try to impress others. Be humble, thinking of others as better than yourselves. Don't look out only for your own interests, but take an interest in others too. And so for humility means we're going to be looking around. We're going to say, you know what? What can I do to make you more important? What can I do to make you the star? What can I do to get, instead of me getting my way, what can I do to help you get your way? Having other people get their way. And the crazy thing is that if you spend your life trying to make yourself more happier, more satisfied, you're always going to be disappointed. But if you spend your life helping others, putting others first, you will find more satisfaction in that than anything else. And there's all sorts of crazy, this isn't just a church thing. There's all sorts of crazy stats that when you put others first, you are more fulfilled. We think that I need to put me first. I need to get my way. I need to eat the food that I want to eat. I need to watch the show that I want to watch. But putting others first, we'll find ourselves more satisfied. And so heroic humility says, I'm going to look at others first as more important than me. Make sense? All right, go ahead and stand up. The third thing is look away. Look away. And so what we're going to do here is we're going to put our hands here and we're like, whoa, look away. We're not looking at that. Looking away, yeah. Can you do that? All right. All right, let's do it on three. Ready? One, two, three, look away. Yeah, you don't want to look at that. All right, we ready to get them involved? Yeah, okay, all right, stand up. Now we're going to start with look up. And then we're going to go to look around. And then we're going to go to look away. Okay, so help me count down to look up. Ready? 3, 2, 1, look up. And we're recognizing that we need God. Okay, hands down. Second thing, look around. Ready? 3, 2, 1, look around. Looking at others first. All right, hands down. This is look away. Do you remember what it is still? Okay, all right. 3, 2, 1, look away. Look away. Right. All right, excellent. All right, you guys can have a seat. So looking away means, okay, if you're going to humble ourselves, we need to stop looking at these things that are so distracting to us, that are so worrying to us. And it's really cool. In 1 Peter chapter 5, Peter writes this. He says, so humble yourselves under the mighty power of God. And under the mighty power of God, he's saying, recognize that God is greater. And that's what Rahab did. And that's what we need to do when we humble ourselves. We say, God, you have the power. And at the right time, he will lift you up in honor. But he ties it right to this phrase. He says, give all your worries and cares to God, for he cares about you. And so Peter says, we're going to humble ourselves. We're going to recognize that God's got the power, and he even has the power over that hard thing in your life. He has the power over that job that you're hoping you get. He has the power over what it's going to be like when you start school in the fall. He has the power to overcome your financial worries. He has the power to overcome your relational fears. Like all of those things, God has the power. And so Peter puts them together and says, you're humbling yourself. You're looking away. Don't focus on the problem and the worries. Look away from that and focus on God. Humble yourself under him because he cares about you, and he can take all of your worries. And that takes humility because, again, we're fixers. We want to make it right. We want to try to solve the problem. And typically all we do is sometimes make things worse. Sometimes we just worry and worry and worry and worry ourselves. And Peter says, look, just look away from the problem and look to God. Humble yourself under his power. Recognize, you know what, God? It seems like there is no way I can solve this. But you care for me, and I'm going to humble myself under your power. I'm going to believe and trust that you can handle this. So that's what we need to do when it comes to looking away. We need to step aside and leave it in God's hands. All right, stand up. Last one. This one is, you can look at me for a second. So this one's, look out. Oh, wait, yeah, look down. You're like, look out. Okay? Watch out. Okay. So kind of imagine you're like, well, I was going to say, imagine you're riding your bike and there's a tree in front of you. You go, look out. No, what you should do is turn away from the tree. but yeah, like, look out, okay? Can we do that? So you kind of look down as you look out, like you're looking out for things. All right, ready? On three. 1, 2, 3. Look out. Okay, yeah, that'll work. Yeah. Okay, all right, stand up. Okay. I gotta go faster here. Ready? We're going to count down. 3, 2, 1. Look up. All right. Down. Now we're going to look around. 3, 2, 1. Look around. All right. Excellent. 3, 2, 1. Look away. All right. Very good. Now finally look out. 3, 2, 1. Look out. All right. Excellent. Have a seat. We'll do this one more time. But looking out means that if we're humbling ourselves, we're saying, you know what, I need to look out and avoid sin. Stay away from the things that are going to cause us trouble, that are going to cause us to turn our backs on God. And James says this in James chapter 4. He says, as the scriptures say, God opposes the proud, meaning God doesn't like proud people. He is opposed. Like, that's kind of a rough statement. That means if you're pride, if you're arrogant, God is actually against you. And that's not a great place to be. He says, but he gives grace to the humble. So he gives the humble what they don't deserve, just like Rahab didn't deserve what she got. So humble yourselves before God. And then he ties it into this. Resist the devil. Stay away from sin. Resist the devil and he will flee from you. Come close to God and God will come close to you. And then he uses this metaphor of dirty hands. He's like, wash your hands. Your hands are so dirty. Wash them, sinners. Purify your hearts. For your loyalty is divided by God and the world. He says, we're a mess. And we're comfortable with that. He's like, no. Don't be proud in your sin. Look out for sin. Wash your hands. Get away from the mess. And he goes on and says, let there be tears for what you have done. Let there be sorrow and deep grief. Let there be sadness instead of laughter and gloom instead of joy. And God isn't saying, like, I hope you're all depressed. He's saying we are sometimes really way too excited about sin. And we're not going, look out. We're going like, it's not that big of a deal. It's okay. And James says, no. We need to humble ourselves because God doesn't like proud people. He doesn't want us to be arrogant. He wants us to look out for sin. So he says, humble yourselves before the Lord and he will lift you up in honor. And so we need to watch out for sin. Because here's the thing, right? If sin didn't look good, it wouldn't be a problem. But sin looks good. We want to do it. And it feels good, at least for a moment. But the problem is that when we sin, we miss out on so much. So we need to look out. We need to humble ourselves before God and let him lift us up and recognize that sin is something we need to be aware of and stay away from. All right, let's do all of it. Stand up, everybody. Everybody on their feet, all of us. Okay, we're going to go fast. Okay, so remember, it's look up. Look around, look away, and then look out. All right? Ready? 3, 2, 1. Look up. 3, 2, 1. Look around. 3, 2, 1. Look away. 3, 2, 1. Look out. All right. Thank you. You guys can have a seat. And you guys can have a seat too. But the issue is that if we want to, like Rahab, there were so many things about her story that were incredible and undeserved. And we're no different. Like in the eyes of a perfect and holy God, we're just prostitutes living in a pagan country. But God wants us to humble ourselves to him. Rahab was rescued by a life of humility, and we are called to live that way too. Let's pray. Father, thank you so much for the example of Rahab, this woman that was not supposed to be the hero, but yet we are talking about her name, 3,000-4,000 years later. And God, I just thank you for that example. I pray that you would help us to live lives of humility like Rahab, recognizing we don't deserve anything, but recognizing that you are greater, that you are better, that you are beyond all the other things in this world, all of our fears, all of the sin that looks so good. Help us to submit to you and not to these other things, to watch you work in us. And as Peter and James both said, as we humble ourselves, you will lift us up. So help us humble ourselves before you and allow you to lift us up and to make nobodies like us part of your great story. Thank you so much. In Jesus' name, amen.